Blog Talk Radio.
Just about putting the closing door on the month of February. It's hard to believe February 21 is just about over. It came in kind of quick and it's leaving us quick as well. And I was thinking about this a little while ago. It's something that we can't really buy, something that we can't actually control. We can't put our hands on it. Can't manipulate it. We can't slow it down. We can't even talk to it. But it has an impact on our lives every single day. And it happens to be time. And sometimes you can try to fight it, but if you do, I don't think that's about you going to win. I'm sure at times, Mr. DeMaurice, you find yourself up against time, and do you win or do you lose?
I don't even know how to answer that, man, but we seem to be losing time all the time.
I'm
trying
to
use it as
time
best as possible.
Time has bruised me up a few times, man, but don't stop me from going up against it, man. I just keep coming back. I keep coming back, and I keep coming back. You know, welcome to When Black Men Talk. By now, you should know it's our forum for 90 minutes. Three gentlemen get together, and we explore provocative talk on the male perspective on love, life, and relationships. And you'll always shoot for an honest self-evaluation. They would not shine with some things that need to be said. Recording back in 1940, or in the 40s, I should say. This gentleman released over 50 albums. Think about that, 50. Sometimes current artists may release about one or two, and they're all done. Performed all around the world. Back in 1974, if he was around then, or if you were paying attention, he played in Zaire, Africa. Remember the Rumble in the Jungle, I'm sorry, where Ali and Foreman did battle? They called the Zaire 74. Affectionately known as King of the Blues, I'm speaking of one Riley B. King. We all call him Mr. B.B. King. We're fortunate to have a gentleman join us this evening that knows Mr. B.B. King quite well. Welcome to One Black Man Talk. Mr. Leonard King, how you feeling?
Hey, I'm feeling good, man. Thank you for having me. This is an honor, to say the least.
Bruh, it's an honor to have you here, man. It's more than an honor to have you here, man. I'm thankful that you for giving us some time and we could do some talking. It's interesting because I want to start it here. I've seen your grandfather perform numerous times and I've seen him on video. I constantly go back sometime and watch some of his old concerts and performances. And, you know, the music is strong, he's strong, but it's something that, to me, I didn't ever hear a lot of people talk about him in this sense. Your granddad, man, was a hell of a dresser, bro. A hell of a dresser. Always clean. Always clean. Always clean to the max.
Well, thank you.
And the question I have, because he always seemed joyous, like he was happy. So was he a teaser, or he was one that you had to tease to kind of get the laugh?
No, he was a teaser himself. He was just as big a jokester as anyone. He loved to laugh, loved to have fun, especially when his family was around. And it's funny that you should say that that he was a great dresser, because that's one of the things I was going to talk about. Because you were going to ask, I know later on, and excuse me if I'm jumping the gun, but later on you were going to ask about our relationship with him. And that's one of the things that he instilled in us, his grandsons, his granddaughters. When you come to see him, come dressed to impress. you know, and ripped jeans, no. He was like, you know, you can afford better than that. You know, he didn't care about style. He just, he liked the suits, he liked the ties, he liked dress shirts. He liked to see his granddaughters in dresses. Man, he was really, yeah, he was really strict about that.
I can imagine. I can only imagine. Do us a favor. Give us a kind of a snapshot picture of the family tree, if you don't mind.
Oh, man. That could go on for a while. You say this is a 90-minute show?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, they could go on for a while. But I'll give a high overview of it. It's no secret. He had 15 kids. But this is the kicker, by 15 different women. So he loved women throughout his life. And out of that, he had approximately 45 grandkids. And I can't keep count of all the great-grandkids right now. But he put it in both of his books. He loved women, and he loved all of his kids.
Let's take a little break. We come back. We're gonna go a little deeper. It's One Black Man Talk. Mr. Dean Reese, Mr. Charles, I'm Mark Elliott. We're fortunate to have B.B. King's grandson, Leonard King. We're gonna come back and spend a little time chat with him. In the meantime, I want to play something that, to me, kind of defined B.B. King to some extent, and defined a time when men wasn't afraid to basically say things in a song. I'm not sure why. I get a certain piece of energy, but I would venture to say if you would record that song today, you might get cut. It's a possibility you might get cut. But back then, that song was very strong. Mr. King, if you don't mind, take us back to your childhood. Share some memorable times and moments that you can recall with your grandfather, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I will do that. Well, I was one of the lucky ones. I'm one of the older grandkids. So I was fortunate enough to, when my dad, because B.B. King is my father's father, he's my paternal grandfather, and my father was working with him as a valet and lived in Las Vegas at the time where B.B. King resided. And so I got a chance to go out there and live with my dad for a couple of years, and therefore I was able to be around him whenever he was off the road and at his house in Las Vegas. And we got to spend a lot of quality time together. My grandfather absolutely loves all of his grandkids, but to have one right there close to him, he spoiled me. I got to say that. He spoiled me, and we grew really close, and that closeness went throughout the rest of our life, you know, so yeah, that's it in a nutshell. I can just go on and on, but yeah, I don't want to take up all of your time.
No, man, we got plenty of time there, man. Don't feel the need to rush at all, man. You feel free to just go. Mm-hmm. I want to touch on maybe some influence or a particular influence you look back now that he had on your life or through your life as you became and matured into the man that you are.
I think one of the biggest things that he instilled in me was humility. He was a blues star. He was the ordained king of the blues, but he, in a nutshell, he was just an average person. He could talk to one of the maids at the hotel he would be at. He could have a conversation with them like he could have with a fellow blues musician or anybody like that. You know, he was just so down to earth, and he treated everybody the same. He loved everybody. And he tried to give them, if they wanted a little bit of his time, he would give them a little bit of his time. Sometimes, you know, he would hold his bus up because he had a couple of buses. One was for the band, one was for him and his road manager and valet. And he would hold up them leaving because he was engaging other people who wanted to meet him, who wanted to get an autograph or something like that. He never rushed off from anybody. And so that humility and watching him be like that, you know, that's me in a nutshell to this day. That's how I am.
It's interesting you bring that point up, because I noticed last year in, I think it was November, you spoke at Texas A&M, if I'm correct. And
I did.
I'm going to give you the chance. To talk about this. Still no need to rush. We have plenty of time. I have a way of kind of shrinking things when it's necessary and kind of expanding when it's necessary. So take your time and go into that if you don't mind, sir.
Well, the invitation came from a college friend of mine. We went to college at Arkansas State University together. And so, of course, he knew who my grandfather was. But he also, my friend, his name is Donnie Smith. He also knew that I was an electrical engineer. I'm still an electrical engineer. I'm a writer. I'm also a photographer. So all of that combined, he felt that, you know, I would be a good fit to speak to his students, because I was also, of course, a student myself, an engineering student at that myself. And so he invited me out there, and I went out to speak with him. And mostly I did start off because I try not to talk about who my grandfather is. I want to kind of get by on my own merit. But in this case, you know, it was pretty much already out there. This is Lynyrd King, the grandson of B.B. King. And I can't get away from that, and I don't want to get away from that, because, you know, he is a special person. He was special not just to me, but to the world. And so going out there, you know, I did talk to them a little bit about what my grandfather meant to me, similar to what I'm saying to you, but also about engineering. And education was really big with my grandfather. He put it out there early on that any of his grandkids, if they wanted to go to college, then he would fully support them going to college. And when I say support, this was financial support. So he made it a lot easier for me. I was blessed, still blessed to this day, because he put it 100% of the bill. All I had to do was send him, okay, granddad, this is how much it's going to be. And he never pushed back or anything, and he fully put me through college. And him doing that makes me appreciate where I am a lot more and make me want to just move forward. I expressed that to the students at the at Texas A&M as well when I was there, just letting them know that, you know, I was blessed. I had it a little bit easier than most, and it was easier because of him. And for that, you know, not just because I'm related to him, but just his support just went a long way with me.
I have a question for you, and it's kind of on the same line, but it's something that I read if you don't mind, you know, maybe enlighten us a little bit. But you received a full scholarship, if I read correctly, to Arkansas State, if I'm not mistaken. And you came out of there after the full scholarship for whatever reasons, but you came out. Even that being said, your grandfather took care of you to go back to college. Now, if this is correct, before I even lie to answer, I'm just going to say that takes a lot, because a lot of parents or grandparents will be like, you know, if you had a full scholarship, you ain't touching my cash. So I would like to, if I'm on the right track, I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Well, let me correct something. Yes, when I first graduated from college, and I did tell the Texas A&M students this as well, when I first graduated from college, I did go to college on a full scholarship. But I happened to go to college with five more of my good friends or best friends from high school. Not a good mix, being a young man going to college with your friends. So, and I didn't make any secret of this. I didn't do well academically. I almost immediately lost that scholarship. And because of that, I had to go to the military I didn't have to go to the military, but I chose to go to the Navy for a couple of years on the apprenticeship program. You know, and that was a good thing for me because I needed that discipline. My grandfather, I have to say, was not happy at all about me going to the military, though. Not at all. But when I did go back, because I met with him before I did go back. I told him I wanted to go back to school. He said, okay, you have my full support. And from that point forward, he was my full support going back to college. And him supporting me so well, it pushed me to do what I had to do to graduate. And I did graduate with above a 3.0 with a degree in electrical engineering.
Congratulations, man. Happy to hear that. I want to open up, if you don't mind, and see if Mr. DeMaurice and Mr. Charles have a question, because I don't like to shut them off from time to time. When we bring guests on, I want to try to keep them involved. In the time, I thought I gave them a break by not coming on, and they beat me up over it. So now when there's a guest on, man, I make sure they get involved, almost like to keep them quiet for the most part. But Mr. Charles, welcome in, my brother. If you have a question, please ask.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. King. See how he does with Mr. King. We've been waiting a half an hour trying to talk to you. See what he does.
Man, I see.
You know what I'm saying? He hogging up the people. We want to talk to you, too. You know what I'm saying? All right, Doug. I'm on medication, Mr. King. You have to forgive me. Anyway, I have a question. No doubt.
Yes.
No doubt. I have a question. Considering what the magnitude of your grandfather's career in his music, do you have any idea, or can you speak to what it was like for him as a music star back in the days? You think about the 40s and the 50s, and we knew what was going on in those turbulent times, and him being a role model, what he represented for the people of color, particularly African Americans.
One of the things that he never really talked about a lot of the things that he went through. All of us knew about it from his books, from interviews, from television. But when he was with us, he kind of tried to avoid those conversations, because when he was with us, it was all about family. He didn't want to bring up all the negativity or anything. But on the rare occasions in which we worked, might have been alone with him and he could talk freely, he did kind of express how disappointed he was that after a certain time, I want to say it was like the 70s, 80s, the tide kind of changed. At first, it was mostly, he had a majority black audience, but after the 70s, late 70s, and moving forward, the tide changed and it became predominantly white. And so he would say every now and then that, you know, that he wished that he could get back to the black people like he once was. But every year up until his death, he always will go back to his home state of Mississippi in the Indianola area and give a free concert. And in those areas, that area, they did love him. And there was a majority black crowd there. But that's what he did to give back to the people. Actually, he did two shows. He did one for everyone at like a festival. And then later on that night, he would go to a club called Club Ebony in Indianola, Mississippi. And this was a hole in the wall. But he would still go there, do it for free, and he loved engaging with the people and giving back to the people.
I can imagine the food that came out of that hole in the wall, man. Sometimes those holes in the walls are the best places for drinks and food, but I can only imagine.
Right.
But I did notice that over the years when even at times – I'm sorry. Please continue.
No,
I was going to say –
absolutely right. Slight delay. So you're fine.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to piggyback on something that you said, because I noticed over the years, the times I went to his shows and, you know, even looking at some of the audiences over the years, you know, it seemed like a lot of the audience didn't look like us. And they were just crazy about his music, man. They was crazy about his music. But I think, too, the way he responded to the audience, man, I've looked at concerts of your grandfather performing in jails, bro. And I haven't seen many artists, even to this day, will go perform in jails, and you look at him going, and he was not afraid to go anywhere and play, not afraid at all. Mr. DeMaurice, your question, sir, if you have one.
Sure. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Mr. King. Love your grandfather's music. I know my favorite songs is The Thrill Is Gone, and me and Charles went to Wilberforce University and used to hear that song every Friday from a gentleman who was a dean of students, Dean Salter. And that was his song to walk out, and that was the end of the day, and that was the beginning of the weekend. But other than him having a passion for music, and you're telling us women and the kids, the grandkids and his children, what other passions did B.B. King have?
Honestly, that was it. In a nutshell, he didn't electronics. He loved electronics, computers, gadgets. He loved that. And that leads me to a story. I think that, Mark, you were going to ask about some special occurrences or occasions that I had with him. And that leads me to a story where I live in Atlanta, Georgia now, and I moved here back in 2003. And so whenever he comes to town, or whenever he comes close to the area, we would go see him. But in this particular occasion, he happened to be playing at, might have been Chastain Park in Atlanta, and he was staying at the Westin by Lenox Mall. So we would go to his hotel room. This is pretty much custom for us. After the shows, we go to his hotel room, and we just hang out with him. On this particular night, it was just my family and I, my wife and my two sons at the time. And we were just hanging out with him in his room. And he looked out of the window, and this is kind of dating myself. He saw USA. I'm not sure if you guys remember Comp USA, but that was that was the Best Buy.
Oh, yeah.
So he looked out the window. It was still fairly early. And he saw it. He's like, is that store still open? I was like, yeah, it's still open. He's like, I want to go there. And so he had me. He left my wife and two sons in the room, and he had me take him to Comp USA. And so while we were there, he's just looking around at the gadgets. I think he picked up a couple of things. And this was the first time that I got a PDA, a personal digital assistant. It was it predated Blackberries and everything. But he got me one of those, you know, just as a gift. And then we were about to go out. And you're like, we can't go back because I told. Actually, you know what? I'm sorry. It was my wedding anniversary. And I want to say it was my fourth or fifth wedding anniversary. He said, we can't go back to the room without getting my wife something. So this is my first experience just really seeing what star status can do for somebody. We went over to Lenox Mall, but it happened to be just after 9, and we walked in the door through Macy's. And one of the sales associates told us that, I'm sorry, we're closed. But another woman was happened to look up, and she recognized who he was, and she was like, oh, my God, that's B.B. King. And after hours, they opened up the entire store for us so I could get my wife a gift. And so that was a special moment for us. And then after that, we went to Wendy's, you know, because he wanted something to eat. But just being with him and just being a part of that, that's something that I would never ever forget and cherish to this day.
I had the chance to see a picture.
And Mr. Peter, I hope I answered your question.
He's talking to you, Mr. DeMaris.
What's that again?
Yeah. I hope I answered his question about his.
Because you know, usually I know men of you know B.B. King's you know a generation. I know my father's generation. They're kind of scared of gadgets. You know, kind of new and improved things. I think my father still has a flip phone, but. But, you know, it's interesting that he was into that and spare no expense and kind of getting the latest and greatest.
Yeah, that was him. He loved his gadgets. Up until the day he passed away.
I saw a picture of you recently with, I believe it was your son when he was younger, of him laying on B.B. King's belly. Adorable shot, man. I'm wondering, you know, at the time when your kids were younger, or maybe when you first got into photography, were you able to take a lot of shots of them?
I wasn't. And, yeah, just to the audience, that's how Mark Elliott and I came across each other. We're in a group called Photographers of Colors on Facebook, and I posted a picture of my grandfather, and it was one of my most cherished shots. I got it framed right behind me right now. But first of all, that was my cousin. That was my cousin's son that was there. This was not, I got to tell everybody, this was not a stage shot by any means, not a photo op or anything like that. My grandfather, we were all in the room. Like I said, it's like custom to come to his room and hang out with him. My cousin had recently had his first son, which is also named Riley, and my grandfather wanted to hold him. And just particular moment, he just happened to be laying down, and I just snapped the shot. No posing or anything like that. That was my grandfather just cherishing the moment with his newborn great-grandson. And as for, I have a lot of shots with him, with my sons, with him, my wife, with him, and other family members with him as well. But that was in my earlier days of photography. After a while, you know, I just wanted to spend the moment with him and not take as many pictures or anything like that. But I still have some epic shots that I'm proud that I got with him.
And that's beautiful, man. That was a gorgeous shot right there, man. The way it was framed, the way he looked up, and he kind of the look on his face says a lot. And it's interesting, man. As strange as it may seem, when I was looking at that photo, it seemed like he was still here, bro. It seemed like I'm looking at the photo, and like you know, he's still here. And that's what took me away when I looked at that photo, man. To me, when a photograph can speak to you and move your imagination like that, yeah, you capture something beautiful there. Something beautiful.
Well, Mark, in actuality, he is still here because his music still lives on. You still hear it from time to time. I can be in an establishment at random, and still to this day, if I hear his music coming over the public announcement system or speakers, you know, I still get a little bit teary-eyed just hearing that. It's almost like he's talking to me as well. I got to say, I had a emotional moment on my birthday back in December where it was my birthday, of course, and I don't know where I was going that day, but I got in my car, and almost as soon as I got in my car, they started playing one of his songs, and that was, man, I had to pull over. That was an emotional moment. It's almost like he was saying happy birthday to me.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's still around. Might not be here in the flesh, but his spirit will forever live on.
Well, hey, man, I want to thank you for coming on and spending some time with us, man. You're always welcome to come back. You know, we tend to talk about various items, various things, and you're always welcome to come on. I'm going to say one thing, man. I love his passionate woman. I don't care if anyone else didn't love that. You know, Mr. Demesak, like, you know, you look at what other passions. If you got that passion, well, you don't have no room for other passions, man. That's enough.
The name of your show is When Black Men Talk, and I have to say, just being interesting as well, is that when he would get his grandsons alone without his granddaughters around, oh man, he could get explicit. He could talk. Yeah, he would tell everything right there. Like, yeah, he'll ask questions and he'll, yeah. Yeah, I'll keep that private. But
Hey,
D. Marie.
Yeah, that sounds like another
D. Marie, he sound like my dad.
Yes, sir.
D. Marie, he sound like my dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, we could do this, Mr. K. We could bring you back, change your name, change his name. You can tell him stories, man. This is what we do right here.
Okay.
No doubt. Because like you said, Mark, real quick, Mr. King, as D. Maurice mentioned about us being at Wilberforce and Dean Salter playing that song, The Thrill Is Gone, on Friday, he had another saying off of that song because he said that it's over, you know, the thrill is gone. He raised his hands up and he would say, that's all she wrote because the pencil broke, baby.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah, man, so no, please, we'll get you, if you don't mind, we'll get you back on. You're always welcome to come on, but come back on. You can share some stories, bro. You can share some stories. We'll dedicate the show to that because I believe there's nothing better than gentlemen getting together, just having open conversation and just basically just saying some things and talking, because we really don't get a chance to do it often. And honestly, a lot of times we don't know how to do it. You know, sometimes we're too afraid to open up and talk, but I like that we can get together and talk about anything, man. Just be straightforward. And we don't look for people to agree, like, or whatever the case may be. It's just who we are. So, yeah, man, you're welcome to come back and let that loose, man. You know, if that's the type of show myself, I will have something in my hand with some ice because it sounds like it go good with that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I got something in my hand now my wife made for me for this. So, Mr. Charles, I'm medicated a little bit, too.
I appreciate you. See, I knew it was something about you I liked. I wait a minute, but I could tell it was the same ilk, so I appreciate you.
But I would be honored to come back on and speak with you guys because, yeah, he dropped a lot of knowledge to me. He to me, to his grandsons, to his granddaughter, to his kids, period. He dropped a lot of knowledge. He could lecture for hours, honestly and truly. He gets us in there. He lectures us. So I'll be glad to. I'll be honored to come back on another time.
Hey, man, I'll be in touch. We'll work on a date, make that happen. Appreciate you stopping by. The doors are always open. I'll be in touch, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Have a good one, guys. Thank you.
You the same. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. give me a little trouble tonight, but that's all right. We're going to figure this out at some point. Gentlemen, we're going a different direction at this point. I'm going to throw out the word disappointment because I was thinking about this. We did a show a few weeks ago, and it was based on Why Are We Single? And sometimes, you know, we do shows and we take a topic and we talk about it. I'll go back and maybe try to find some areas where maybe some things we didn't cover or some things that could be a little more deeply looked at. And it kind of struck me that sometimes for us as men, we don't talk about it. And people assume part of the times why we may not rush to be into relationships or be in a relationship because we're afraid of commitment. But I don't think sometimes it's the fear of commitment. It might be the fear of being disappointed. So I wanted to spend a little time on that word itself. You know, I'm keen of taking words sometimes and trying to find other meanings for it and how it kind of works into our lives and the way we live in. But it's emotion felt when one expectations aren't met. And sometimes when you meet someone and you're grooving and you're moving along and things are going well, it's hard not to kind of get some type of expectations, thinking that this has potential to do X, Y, Z, may go here, can do this, what the case may be. And then, you know, we may let our guard down, we become vulnerable, and we realize what we were thinking sometimes just hasn't happened, and we move away. So I want to spend some time in that area because I think a lot of times for men, we don't talk about our disappointments. We just focus on, you know what, I'm just going to prevent them from happening, but we don't really spend the time to try to evaluate and look back at our disappointments. So I'll come to you first, Mr. DeMaurice. I know Mr. Charles is saying right now, don't come to me. I'll come to you first, Mr. DeMaurice.
You said that.
Looking back. I know you by now, my brother. I know you, man. So I'll come to you first, Mr. DeMaurice. In the terms of looking back at some of your past relationships and past loves, did disappointment play a quiet role in kind of forming and kind of maybe helping you maintain the single status that that you currently have?
Yeah, you could say that the word disappointment comes into play because sometimes when you try to enter into new relationships, you kind of see some of the old patterns of past relationships, whether it comes from the person you're pursuing a relationship with or in yourself, that you go, you know what, I don't want to go down this road again. And so because of the disappointed feelings you felt. So I would say that. And then I think as we mature and we get farther along in this journey, we tend to kind of see things before it kind of unfolds. And, you know, it may bring up those thoughts of disappointment or that, you know, that this is not going to work. And so before you get too deep into the relationship, you pull back and see it for what it is and choose to remain single.
Okay. I'm going to come back with something, but I want to make Mr. Charles in real quick. Mr. Charles, is disappointment something that could be playing a quiet role and the reason why, you know, you maintain or have a single status?
I would say I think so, because we hear that old adage, and B.B. King had it down best. As you get older, you go, I'm free from your spell. You know, so anyway. you know, reminder of certain things. But because we as men don't want to be disappointed, but we don't want to seem as we're soft either. But I think you recognize if something's not going to work, if you can't work through something, or if not so much that a person needs to change, but if they're not willing to work with you to make the relationship solid. And I think there's, you know, you can never change a person, we know that, but I think there's some give and take to make sure that a relationship flourishes. So I would say, yeah.
Now, with that being said, I agree. I think that I think it's quietly kind of I'm not going to say it's the backdrop, but it's definitely part of the ingredient why single resides here. Because with disappointment, sometimes you feel like you waste your time. Like you gave, you might have gave your release, you opened up, and when that disappointment comes, it's like, wow, my time would have been better served if I'd have done X, Y, Z. So, I think it plays a role. I'm not going to say significant, but I think that plays a role more so than the fear of commitment. And I think most men, you know, we carry that stigma where we don't want to commit. We just don't want to commit. We don't want to commit. A commitment is something that we're not afraid of, but we don't want to waste time committing. And people say, well, how do you know if you're not wasting, if you commit, you're going to waste time? If you see some pre-markers that are there, you understand that it's not worthy of your commitment. It's just not worthy of you basically giving into it. So therefore, you're trying to avoid the disappointment. You can't bring the full commitment. You just can't. It's hard for you to. And it probably becomes harder the older we get to basically commit due to the fear of disappointment. Now, Mr. Charles, I'm going to come back to you, but I wonder sometimes with that all that being thrown out there being said, if we just to analyze, we'll do this on an individual basis. Could it be some situations where you probably could have gave a little more time, a little more energy, maybe been a little hastier than kind of moving away from to just to see if how it was going to play itself out?
I think in my situation, or just from personal experience, that yes, sometimes you kind of wonder, well, I should have waited a little bit longer and maybe it'll work itself out. But I think the other part, the other intangible in there is, what are you willing to do to make this work? And I think that's part of it. So you have to ask yourself that question. It's like, could this happen? And you can't change people, but we as men, as leaders, sometimes understand that maybe women are missing something. And I'm not saying you can fill everything up for them, but you can provide them with something that allows them to have a comfort and maybe open up and be the person that they really should be. And I think that goes a long way with the connection of when you think about how that worked out for yourself in regards to the disappointment, in regards to how you feel about it and what can you do overall instead of pulling back. Because there's a lot, I guess, so that's intent. That's a, and it goes along with what the initial point that you made.
Yeah. Mr. DeMaurice, you know, if you look back at some times that you've been involved fully, partially, and do you ever say to yourself, I could have probably gave that, go back and analyze it, I could have probably maybe hung out a little longer just to see how things would have turned out?
I'm going to say no, because usually when I'm in relationships, I try to give it the benefit of the doubt, and sometimes may stay a little bit longer than I should, in hopes of that happening. But I tend to, with me, I tend to go through a checklist and analyze. And then once I come to that conclusion, I'm pretty much exhausted, everything that the situation is. Everything that you're going to see in the situation. I mean, you really kind of have to kind of look at it for what it is, and instead of saying, you know what, let me give it 6 more months, this, that, the other. I tend to, be more realistic and say, okay, I've seen all the different stages. I've seen all the different kind of moods and I'm looking at the situation. It's not going to get any better. And no matter what I do or what the other person does, because sometimes it's not that, we're in that situation where, we're given a little time. We may not be, I know sometimes I feel like, you know what, this person wants this and I can never be that. So let me just pull back. But, I'm going to have to give that a no, like Randy Jackson on that show. I'm going to get that a no, dog. yeah, because sometimes I stay a little bit too longer. And just to see, and it tends to get worse once you kind of give it that extra time. It's like, oh, this is really going to be bad, or it's really bad, and you got to go, or you get pushed out. So That's going to be a hard no for me, man.
Well, hard no. Okay. All right. I'm going to take a middle of the road here because I think there's been times where I probably could hung a little longer. And probably at the time I didn't think that way. But looking back and kind of analyzing, I think there's been some times that I probably could have maybe kind of given it a shot. And I say that because there's been some times where I've been in situations, you know, and I knew right off the bat, okay, yeah, I did the right thing. But there's been a few times where I basically thought about kind of basically pulling away, and I didn't. And things kind of straightened themselves out a little bit. They kind of like, you know, the curve kind of went to a sense of straightening. And I wouldn't have seen that if I was being super impulsive and kind of pulling away. And I was having a conversation with Kat the other day, a couple of weeks ago, when I was talking, and he was telling me about a situation. And I said to him, I think you need to just to give a little bit more time because, you know, it's almost like your guard is up. Let it down a little bit. If you're correct, it won't take long for you. What you're thinking of this particular situation, it won't take for you long for you to really see it. So I think sometimes, speaking for me, I'm going to say middle road, that sometimes it has worked. And sometimes I was dead on, and sometimes I question, you know, did I really kind of give it to the space that it needed? Because sometimes people will, you know, they might come in one way and start one way, and then they might kind of sense things, and they can adapt. They can adapt. And we all bring different things to a particular situation and a chance of starting a potential relationship. So we all kind of bring some different things to it. But I want to go to the word commitment just for a little while, because here again, I want to speak on the fear of, you know, people think that we have, that's the biggest thing you always hear when men choose not to be involved. But use fear of commitment. And they say that, like, you know, you basically want to keep your options open. You want to be able to kind of find something better. You open around and blah, blah, blah. And to me, I always looked at when someone said that to me, whatever the case may be, it's like you're speaking like you're it. like you know. And I'm not saying there was nothing better, but I think that's kind of ballsy to say to someone, you're afraid to commit because you know. I might just be afraid to commit because I know you're not it. You know, it's not, you know, and that's okay, because that may not be it for you, but there's some things that I can see. So if coming back to this, Mr. DeMaurice, if you kind of look at, you know, yourself as an individual over the years and the times you basically have moved on, you gave it time and you moved on, was it more so a fear of commitment or the potential fear of just basically not being disappointed?
No, I wouldn't say it was a fear of commitment at all. Metaphorically speaking, if it ain't tight, it ain't right. So if you see some loose ends and some things that, you know, that are not going to be right for you, then, you know, it's not the fear of commitment. It's the realization that this is not going to be right for me. This is not going to be a good situation for me. So if it ain't tight, it ain't right. So, it was never, I know for me, it's never about not wanting commitment at all. And I hate that misnomer that women have of men, that men don't like to commit. Men commit to women that bring out the best in them, that make them feel that they have somebody in their corner and they're willing to fight for them. But if we don't have that and we don't have somebody that inspires us or someone that is not compatible or right for us, then no, we're gonna push back on committing because we're basically setting ourselves up for failure.
I agree with that 100%. Mr. Charles, what has it been when you think about it? Has it been a fear of commitment or a fear of the potential of being disappointed after time has been spent and given?
Definitely not commitment, a fear of commitment. But as Mr. DeMaurice said, particularly if you have a dry spell, let's say you have not committed to somebody in a while, couple years or maybe a few years, then they definitely, a lot of people mark you as that. Oh, you just afraid to commit. Like, No, I'm looking for somebody that that fits my needs, that, you know, fulfills me as a person. You can't say that, of course, but that's what you're thinking. But, no, I mean, you just want to make sure that when you put time into a relationship or you're with someone, that it has the right potential to last. And it's worthwhile. And I think the misnomer here is the fact that when women do it, a lot of times it's okay, right? Well, she don't want just anybody. She's worthwhile. She's a good church woman. We hear all those things, right? You know, she loves the Lord. She's going to be a good match for somebody. She does.
Oh, damn.
You hear that? But then when it comes to a man, you don't get to say, well, he's a good man. He's good for somebody. He's like, look, he's just scared of commitment. He's scared of missing it. He's scared of that. He's like, you know, come on. He's like, well, damn, well, maybe, you know, she ain't right for me. Did you ever look at the girl? Did you ever peep her and really find out who she is? But you can't say that, though. So then it's like, who you think you are then? Anyway, enough of that. Let me stop somebody. Anyway, sorry, sponsors. Anyway. I want to take nobody off.
That one is over the applause, my brother, because they treat us like, sometimes, not because they all, so they don't like, hey, well, what are you saying? But here's the thing I think that bothers them, and here's how they treat us. Like, we should not have the right to choose. If they ready, you should be ready. You should not stand back and analyze and have the right to choose. If they dig you to an extent, hell, come here, be miserable, be whatever, but be here. And if it ain't, like, somewhat, like when Mr. D said, if it ain't right and whatever, tight or whatever it is, why are you stepping through that door? And I know there's been times, as she said, men have options, and I'm not disagreeing with that, but hell, we got choices, bro. Maybe they're the same thing, but you choose to be happy. You choose to have someone with you that's going to amplify your happiness. If I'm happy by myself, why am I going to come with you or be with you and just going to subtract from my happiness? Think about that for a second. You want to add on. You want to add, not subtract. So if I'm going to be with you or we're going to be together, you got to be a plus. You have to be a plus because I'm already at a level where I'm happy and content. So, and I would say the same towards you. I should bring you a plus, not a subtraction. But at the end of the day, I have a choice. And if I see where it's not going to be a plus, it's going to be a division, it's going to be a subtraction, it's a choice. I've heard I was aging. You're getting too old. I'm getting too old for what? What am I getting too old for? You know, you need to settle down for what? Settle down with what? With you? I mean, realistically, those are some old dumbass thinking, in my opinion. You know, I'm never too old to be happy. Never too old to be. I could be 80. As long as I'm happy, I'm good. That's living to me. So age has no barrier where, you know, you have to be with someone. I have some guys say this. I have women say this, too. You know, I want to grow old with somebody. What that going to help? Is that going to benefit me growing old with somebody? It's nice. But am I going to live longer because I grow old with somebody? You know, I mean, it'd be nice, but I don't have to. I'm going to go with somebody that's going to, here again, it's going to be a plus. That's going to be a benefit. Make the rest of my days of my life joyful, happy. I'm not saying every day is going to be sunny, it's not going to rain. But damn, I'm not going to be carrying an umbrella every day. I'm just not. So that comes back to choices. You have a choice. You have a right. And I think underneath, that's where you get that fear where they talk about fear of commitment. No, it's not a fear of commitment. We're smart enough and we realize that we're not putting ourselves in a situation that's not going to bring us a plus. It's just not. And if that bothers you, oh, well. You said something earlier, Mr. Charles, I want to come back to, man, when you said about leadership. And I really wanted to touch base on this because a woman will say sometimes, or people will say, you know, I want somebody to lead. But they won't get out of the way. True or false?
Oh, wow. Sometimes, yes, they won't get out of the way. But then it's almost where those things, for me anyway, as my experience has been, it's almost like you have to prove to them that you need to calm down and step back. And because I think it's, they're so used to being independent, it's worked for them, but now you're in another position or you're in a relationship, and then they feel like, well, I'm not stepping back because I've been doing this all by myself, but you're not happy. And sometimes when you've been by yourself, you made some decisions that put you in a bad light. And if somebody, when you're in a relationship, is a better expert or knows something a little bit more than you in an area, you should let them handle it, particularly something like finances. You know, if you in major crazy debt because you chose to buy cars on buy here, pay here, because you mismanaged your money, and you're buying all these things and you just can't get it together, and if somebody can help you through that in a relationship, why wouldn't you let them instead of trying to prove that you're the dominant queen all the time? Anyway, I don't know anything about that. I think I read that in the magazine. All right.
Probably answered. You know what's interesting about the word independence? How many times hear a man throw that up? I'm independent. Just think about that for a second. How many times hear a word? You ever just sat in a conversation, was talking, I'm independent. Why is that got to mean? So which one you want? You want to be with someone or you want to be independent? Because if you want to wear that independent sleeve, go be happy with that. And I'm not saying you have to lose who you are to be with someone, but why is that word always, from a woman, has to be tossed out? I'm independent. So to you, Mr. DeMaurice, the same question, sir. You know, when they act like they want you to lead, why are they always kind of in the way, questioning what you're doing, not allowing you to lead freely?
I agree with what Mr. Charles said, but part of that is our fault, not us personally, but men, past relationships that they've probably been in, where men were given that leeway to lead, and they didn't know how, and they botched it up. So, you know, as she gets into other relationships, you really have to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that once she relinquished that role, that you're able to carry out that role. So I think sometimes it comes from being scarred from past relationships. Excuse me. I've met a lot of women who were in relationships like that, and they were just, you know, it took a long time to let that guard down, to have that man in that role as being a man and being a leadership role and leading it and you know, in the relationship, or and not kind of getting in the way or sabotaging it because you want it a certain way. Because once you do things on your own sometimes, it's hard to relinquish that power to somebody else to say, okay, I don't have to do this anymore. You can do it, because they may not do it the way you want them to do it or to your satisfaction or any kind of reason that would help you be help you in a relationship or give you more autonomy into being yourself. So, yeah, I think some partly is guys that have ruined it for the next man coming up. That you know, why women are kind of defensive when it comes to giving up that independent kind of status, because they've been unfulfilled or, the word of the night, disappointed with other guys that came before you.
Let me ask you this then, because they hung with a knucklehead for a long period of time. You got to prove it to him now. He didn't have to prove anything. He proved he wasn't worthy, and you kept trying to make him worthy. Now you're basically worthy, and you got to prove yourself worth. Can you explain that to me? I'm just trying to figure that one out.
You know, it's like, you know, once you go through a bunch of knuckleheads, you think everything's a knucklehead. Once you go through a world with a bunch of nails, you think every problem needs to be handled with a hammer. So,
well,
it's hard to get out of that space. Well, so even though you're the one, even though they say you're the one and all this other stuff, hard, you know, some habits are hard to break. And for some of the women that are out there, it's a hard habit to break.
I think realistically, you know, if you're going to be, and this is from a man and a woman perspective, I'm speaking from now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to make that, then you just got to trust. And so that person proved that their trust is not worthy of them to allow them to lead, or that man allow her to do some things. You have to release, because to me, it's a waste of time, just my personal opinion, sitting around waiting for somebody to prove something to you. Because if you don't kind of sense some things early on, this person is worthy of trusting and handling this, you're wasting your time. Just my opinion. You're wasting some very valuable time, because if your instincts tell you you can't trust her and she can't trust you to do X, Y, Z, then why are you there? Why are you there? Because it's that's one of those situations you really need to kind of read it kind of quickly and go, uh-uh. But a lot of times on both sides of the fence, we give the keys to the car to the people we know they can't drive it. We know they can't drive. But you give them the keys. You give them the keys. And then when they smash it and crash it, you keep fixing the car but letting them drive it again. So now you come across a person that deserves the keys, you want to sit around and act like, well, what happened before? And that's my point. I don't want to hear that, to be honest with you. What, you know, I judge you based on what you're presenting, and I would hope you do the same. And if you can't do that, we're wasting each other's time. We just are, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not judging you based on what somebody did 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 10 years ago. I'm judging on the day that we're speaking on and what I see and what I feel. And if you can't do the same, then we're wasting time. I'm not passing no tests. I'm not jumping through no damn hoops. If you don't feel it, then you just don't feel it. It's just where I feel. Mr. Charles, I'm going to come to you in a sense. We're talking about, you know, disappointment, commitment, essays. But after experiencing disappointment as a man, and we're going to go back to the man's perspective at this point, is it possible, you know, after this, you know, really kind of experiencing that from time to time, is it possible to really kind of get over that and get past that and really love like you've never been disappointed or hurt before?
I think it's possible, but I think that you need to be honest with yourself. And for me anyway, I had to give my time to kind of to heal or whatever it is, kind of get that out of my system, right? A lot of women don't understand this, but if a man says he's in, a real man, he's in. And it's some emotional scarring, and he might really like what you had. And therefore, you think, oh, we just going to jump to another woman or whatever, you know, and just keep it moving, but that's not always the case. But I think that when you know or you feel like there's a lot of potential there, then you kind of kick yourself, because it's like, well, like you mentioned before, why wouldn't if a person has shown you that they're capable of doing things, why wouldn't they take a step back when they've clearly shown you through their life? And I used to catch that a little bit, because they were like, well, you have never been married, you don't have any kids, how can I, like, trust you? And I'm like, well, I've been a grown man since I was 14 on the real talk, as far as taking care of things and doing stuff. So if I can take care of myself, you've always had your parents and somebody always there. When you fall, somebody there to pick you up. How in the hell do you not think I could not take care of you? You know what I'm saying? Real talk. And I'm like, now all of a sudden, you think I'm not capable? If anything, you should be running, almost coming to me like, well, What do you think? No, but, you know, I used to smile at that, because I'm like, you just don't know. You've been, I mean, and I'm not mad at nobody, but I'm like, sometimes I'm like, you have just been more or less catered to and babied your whole life. You don't know what it's like. And then something like that happens, even particularly when you lose your parents. You lose your parents later in life. I mean, you've been in the cushion. I've been on the ground, you know, like a soldier running since I was 14. And you think I'm gonna let if you think, here's the thing, I would say to them, if you think I can take care of me, and if I would have got a relationship with you, you think I'm gonna let you fall too and not let you survive? You're not gonna make it. I'm gonna even work even harder, and I'm gonna make sure you're taken care of. But that's the story.
Give an opportunity, Mr. DeMaurice. Is it possible after experiencing the disappointment, the hurt, is it possible to wipe the slate clean? Move on, and the next love start fresh like it hasn't happened.
I think for some it could be possible. Anything is possible. But think about it. You know, brothers like this who say any and everything to get who they want. And they probably promised the moon, the stars. They make songs about it, you know. What's the song, After Seven, Ready or Not? I'll give you the sun,
mm-hmm.
the moon, the sky.
There it is.
And more than, if I can't give you that, I'll give you more than all this other stuff. And so you have brothers who do that. You have brothers who just pour it on thick like molasses and can't come through. And so we wonder why some people have doubts when other people come up who are genuine, who are sincere in doing this, and you know, they're not, you know, really believing at that particular time, because that other brother might have had a smooth rap that they went all in and believed all this stuff, and then you coming in just being sincere, your rap ain't that smooth. It wasn't smoother than the other guy. So now, you know, she's looking kind of skeptical. But I think it's possible. I think it's possible once you get to the realization that all men aren't the same, and that a real man, when it's in front of you, you should know the difference between the real and the fake. So I think it's possible once that real man steps up and his actions prove that, you know, he's the real one, and, you know, you check it out, you kick the tires and all that other stuff, then, you know, wipe that slate clean. Give that man a chance. But if you never give him a chance, that's going to be the one that got away. And I've heard that in my lifetime a lot, where, you know, women come back and say, you know, you're the one that got away. Like, yeah, okay. So now what do I do with this now? No, you know, because things have changed. What do I do with this information now?
I never understood. I can understand basically when you're younger, but how do you fall in love with a rap game? Because the word game itself should tell you right then and there it's not long-lasting. It's probably going to expire after a period of time. So when someone comes to you with a rap game, male or female, in a sense, that's what you're falling in love with, or you're falling in love with the person? Personally, to me, you start the slate and you clean the slate clean and you start fresh. You know, you don't bring over anything else left over. You know, you just basically start fresh and you see what's in front of you and you deal with and judge what's in front of you based on what's in front of you. But to me, I just find that interesting, and that's part of the problem, the rap game. You know, the rap game, what's being said, what's being promised, what's you know, uh-uh. I mean, I think at some point we should be too old to be falling in love with a rap game. I can still fall in love with a person, fall in love with a heart, but the rap game, I don't get it.
Don't know the right words to say, I'm not magic. Don't hold the world in my hands. Wish I could fly through the air like a hero, but I'm just someone who loves you, that's all I am. Wish I could take you away to a palace, make you the queen of the land, all the riches and gold, I don't have them. I'm just someone who loves you, that's all I am.
Mr. Charles, your question you have for us this week, sir?
Yes. My question is, how long do you think because we're grown people now, right? I'm about to get in trouble when I thought about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. We're growing up, folks, and you meet somebody. Is there a certain time limit or that you think, if you're serious about them or moving towards a relationship, that a man should have to wait for sex?
No, my answer would be no, bro. because I look at it like I've said this and I feel this way. I mean, I understand we all look at sex differently, but if you kind of sense you're going to be with someone, you're going to hang out, what's the difference in 1 month, 2 months, 3 months? What's the difference? Really what it is. You know, at some point you got to push away your inhibitions. And if you feel like you want to have sex with them, it is what it is. You know, it just comes down to if that's your choice, that's your choice. At the same time, if two people decide they want to have sex, it's just what it is. You should not be thinking they're going to look at you different, what the case is going to be. But if a man speaking to a woman in a sense, if you make me wait, or we have sex within, let's say, 2 days, and we're going to be together, or basically 2 months from now, just because you make me wait for 2 months, I ain't going to think any less of you or any more of you. It's not. If I think you're a slut in 2 days, I'm going to get a slut in 2 months. I mean, you know when you come across someone that this is they're just doing as their pastime or something they choose to do and they want to do. So it's evaluated based on that. You know, you can make a person wait 6 months. If they know you to be a slut, that's who you are. You just basically starved them for 6 months. So time, which I find to be interesting. I know it was a knucklehead radio artist, comedian came out with this 90-day rule, where the case may be. That cat has no idea what he's talking about. Just my personal opinion. And if he does, he needs to talk to his stepdaughter and get her right, because she's running around there like a tramp. Your response, Mr. DeMarace.
How am I supposed to follow that? Oh, man. My thing is, if people are vibing and the vibe is there and the feeling's there and the feeling's mutual, you know, there's no time, you know, in between people and time, space, and all that. It just got to be the vibe. It has to be the right vibe where it's a mutual feeling and you both have an understanding of what you're getting into and you both want to get into it. So I never really went by time. I know some guys would think, well, you know, if I get it too soon, then, you know, if I was able to do it this quick, then, you know, the average guy is able to do it. So, and I know maybe that's, you know, feeding into some people's insecurity. But no, I never really kind of thought about it from the time factor. I just thought about it with, if I'm feeling you, you're feeling me, and this thing is mutual, then we do what we do. We're adults, and that's what adults do.
There it is. Yeah, I never understand. I mean, for a guy, real quick, to say, you know, if I'm getting it, why are you worrying about what he's doing? It's none of your business, bro. You know what I mean? It's none of your business, bro. Then if that's what you're worried about, you need to walk off. Seriously. If I'm getting it, all that, oh, man, please. Mr. Charles, your answer. So.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Yeah, he is. I mean, it is about the vibe, and it should be about the vibe. You feeling me? I'm feeling you. But then again, you have those that, you know, you run into certain women that, you know, they've been out there in the world doing what they do, and they're not hanging out with the players. Then all of a sudden, they want to get brand new. Now they rededicated themselves to religion. They ain't mad at that. That's what you do. But damn, for real. So I gotta commit to you for 2 years, or I gotta marry you so I can vibe with you? Come on, man. Really? Damn. It's a whole new wave of things. I'm like, man, I'm just, I don't understand that. I'm sitting there going, I do, but I don't. So what you want me to do, marry you? And then we can vibe? What if I don't like what we doing when we vibe? You might not like what I'm doing, so we gotta check it out, right? We gotta drive the car. Do you buy a car sight on scene or do you test drive? Anyway, and we got good on anyway, Christmas. I'm going to. I'm not gonna get no dates no more now. I'm locked down. It's all right.
Oh man, you know it's interesting, man. I'm gonna just say this, and what I find to be real interesting is that. There's some people that have been holy. I call them holy. Well, it's not that I call them. I heard this word years ago. This lady told me that she's looking at some women, these women, and she called them holy rollers. Because they've been out there all their life, slinging it around, doing whatever. But now they're up in age, they want to try to get into heaven. So now everything is basically we gotta go. Now we gotta do this, like Mr. Charles said. It's gotta be X, Y, Z. You gotta do this. You gotta roll this out and all that. And it's like, okay, you weren't doing that 2 months ago. You weren't doing that 5 years ago. Why now is all of a sudden there's all this prerequisite stuff? Because, you know, they want to get into heaven now, but they weren't thinking about heaven before. But now the focus is I must get into heaven, I guess. Your question, Mr. DeMaurice.
It's kind of a question in the comment. Me and Mr. Charles talked about this the other day after the show, and after the sports show. And the song Come and Go With Me by Teddy Pendergrass. Because brothers, people have been writing songs, poetry, trying to get where they need to get with a woman for years. Could you deny Teddy Pendergrass? If you heard him begging on that song, I heard it the other day and just sat there and just laughed because that brother was begging. And he wasn't taking no for an answer. The woman was talking back like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what you're going to do with me. And all this other stuff. We're going to get some wine. We're going to work things out. How can you deny that rap, bro? The way
Teddy
was putting it down, bro. How do you...
I don't know, bro. I don't know. I guess it worked for Teddy. Yeah, I guess it worked for Teddy, but yeah, I guess it's tough. I always worked with a cat. I worked with a cat years ago, and he it was a song by Luther Vandross. I forgot the name of the song. I can almost hear the song, but he said if you invite her over and you put that song on, he said well, halfway through that song, if her panties don't come down, open the door and send her home because they ain't coming down. So I don't know. Maybe it's certain songs that speak to
it. Is it only for one night?
No, it wasn't one of his popular songs, but one of those songs that carried that emotion built through the song. So he's like, yeah, if it don't work, or that's one, bro.
That's why we play records when we're alone with a woman. Boy, we can't say it. The music got to say it. The music got to come through for us. Everybody had that tape. That tape where, okay, halfway through this tape, everybody's clothes should be off. So
that's the game plan, right? That's the game plan. Oh, man, that's the game plan. Gentlemen, you know we had Mr. Little King on earlier, B.B. King's son. Not son, I'm sorry, grandson.
Let Mr. Charles answer.
I'm sorry, Mr. Charles. I even know it was a question, man. I know it was, but I'm sorry, Mr. John. Please come on in, sir. Your response.
Oh, no problem, man. It's just like when you say, though, it's like you said, Teddy was speaking to her. He said, come on over to my place. Sip a little wine. Work things out. You know, it's just like, you going to get my coat. You going to bring me back. It's like all the things he runs down. Your car's right outside. Teddy, like, I got to get around that girl. Every question you got, I got to answer. What you going to do with it? And he was slowly but surely locking the door, just ready to go. You going to get my coat? Like, you going to be a gentleman? Yeah, everything you need? Car's right outside. He had it set up to the seat. That went in the Ivy Brothers, in between the seats. Like, come on. When you heard that,
hey,
in between the seats, you got like,
yeah.
Ain't
no mystery.
Right. If I could see.
Man.
Yeah. I want to bring you here, laying next to me, sharing our look. What? Between the seats. Come on.
Yeah, between the sheets. That was a cold cut right there, boy. You couldn't. That was just like right in. That's just like between the sheets. Woo!
Yeah,
that's
like
the best
you said,
thing you
then,
heard all week.
Ain't nothing happening after that. She's dead, or you just a friend.
How you going to deny it?
Call yourself Bismarck.
You must
call yourself.
You laying down like that.
You must call yourself like Bismarcky then, bro. You just a friend.
How you gonna refuse when they get laid down like that? That's the best. Anybody laid it down at night? telling you exactly what you want to hear, got all the answers. You can't deny it. You can't say no.
Barry White might have said it best. He said, take it off. I want to see you like you came into the world.
Oh, man. Maybe rap game has a place. You don't fall in love with it. Don't fall in love with it.
Hey. You can, it's real. You can't hate the player, hate the game. Because you know what? Some women just like this. Some women still, even they get older, they just want to hear those sweet nothings.
Then you're pissed off in a couple of weeks when you realize that's all it was.
That's true. But guess what? He had 2 weeks of total satisfaction. Petey Wee started double son-in-law.
Now you walk up to her, she's going to give you hell after the 2 weeks, bro. That's the problem. You walk up to her, you're going to give hell.
But you know, the true Max and the true players disappear anyway, so they're winning.
Now you see me, now you don't. Gentlemen, we had Mr. Luther King on earlier, and it made me wonder, in a sense, if there's a cat or a woman that basically reformed earlier that's no longer here, if you can basically sit down tomorrow night and watch them perform, who would it be, Mr. Charles?
God, that's oof. So many, man. So many. Off the top of my head, and I know this is crazy, it would either be Al Jarreau or no, not even that. I'm going to go deeper. It'd be Ray Charles, man. I love to see that man in his prime in person. Yeah, Ray Charles.
Ooh.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Ray Charles. Mr. D. Maurice, yeah. who you got, man? Who you got? Who you with? Who you got?
Yeah, Charles almost got mine. Al Jarreau, man. I never got to see him play live, man. And that's one performer. Him and Prince. Those are two performers that I never got to see live. I did get to see Phyllis Hyman live, but it was I saw her twice. And the first time I saw her, it just blew me away. But the second time I saw her was like maybe 1 or 2 weeks before she died. And she was on stage. And you can tell she was either on drugs or drunk or something because she was singing with the Whispers. And the Whispers kept filling in the singer parts. And it was so sad that was the last time I got to see her. But I would love to see her again. Her not being here, love to see her again in her prime. Because her singing, man, something about her just touched your soul, bro. It just touched your soul when she sung. And she sung with her whole heart. But that last time, like, broke my heart because, you know, even the Whispers, you know, Scotty and all the gang, they were trying to, you know, hold her up. And then at one point they had to take her off stage. And it was one of the saddest things you ever wanted to see.
Yeah, that is sad, man. Always was a big Phyllis Hyman fan. I was mad for a while after she passed, bro. Mad. Like, I knew her personally. Just mad. I'm going to go back a little deeper with mine. Those cats, Ray Charles, I've seen him perform, but yeah, Ray Charles, not Mr. Ray Charles, but a cat that I didn't have a chance to see, but I go back and I visit his music sometimes, Otis Redding, and to me, those Otis Redding and Sam Cooke, they have some soulfulness about them that was just, oh man, it's hard to kind of walk away from, We know we've been losing some great ones lately, and I'm not sure if we even covered in losing Cicely Tyson a little while ago, and we knew of her greatness and what she brought. And just the name sometimes, man, when you say her name, it just stood for so much, so much. So with that being said, I'm going to – this might be a little tougher than basically an artist, but this person doesn't have to be passed on. This person is still around, and they're still here. Or it could be somebody that passed on, Mr. DeMarie. an artist, a woman artist, or I'm sorry, an actress, or an artist, or a recording artist, that if you had a chance Tuesday night to view, who would she be?
I'm going to go new school on this one because I don't know what it is about her lately, and I've been paying a lot of attention to her. Rihanna, I got to meet her. I got to meet her personally.
You don't know what it is.
Happy birthday, Rihanna. Happy belated birthday, Rihanna. I've been watching videos. Man, I got to meet her or something. I got to figure out a way.
You know,
because I don't. She's captured my attention. Yeah, I know what it is. But you know, oh my goodness, that island girl, boy, I don't know. She has just captured me in the last few months. I can't explain it, man. I can't explain it. But I got to find a way. Happy birthday, man.
What's the cat that hasn't been the same that was with her one time? Oh, Chris Brown. I'm just checking.
Oh, Chris Brown.
Yeah.
Oh, there's something wrong with him.
Yeah.
There's got to be something wrong with him.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Oh, man. I don't know what it is. Mr. Charles.
Yeah. I told D. Maurice that I had a passing acquaintance with Rihanna. And he was like, he's still mad at me about that down in Miami. Anyway, golden, straight, truly golden.
Golden skin.
Golden, bro. Golden. Like butter. Shea butter. No, that's not golden. Anyway, but I'm going to stay safe. I probably would go with. I'd love to see Billie Holiday, man, in her prime back in the day. In the smoke-filled room, everything. I want all that. I want it where she, with her raspy voice. Yeah, yep. Billie Holiday. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pull out a name that I know exactly how I want to see her, but I want to see her dated back because I'm afraid to see her now. I'm not sure how she will look now. But remember when she first came out, she used to wear this black hat, and she'd push it down her head, and she had the eyes and the nose and the lips. And her name doesn't come up that often, Mickey Howard. And if I can go back this year, I don't know. Yeah, she's beautiful. She sang well, too, gorgeous voice, but I'm afraid to see her now. I'm thinking that time may not have been good to her. So I'm a little afraid to see her now. We'll do a little quick hit, we got like a minute and a half, so about 30 seconds. Something that's kind of been on your mind real quick, Mr. John, we'll jump to that before we get about it. Something kind of been on your mind for a little bit.
Yeah, just more or less anything about the drama that is unfolding after the hype of 45 leaves, just the hype of it. People just not having answers and being clueless. I mean, I just don't get that. People acting as if their lives are over, they're like lost sheep. Like, damn, it was the same thing before he took office. Wake up. Seriously.
All right. Mr. DeRay, 30 seconds quick. Expand your mind. Get something that might be in your mind.
There are a lot of clowns that follow him, but there's one clown who paid $2.5 million for the investigation of voter fraud, and now he wants his money back. Clown.
Wow.
Clown.
I'm amazed sometimes how ignorance and stupidity shows itself in this country. Then again, I'm not amazed. I enjoy it. Gentlemen, we'll get together real soon. We'll do it again. It's When Black Men Talk. This is D. Reese, Mr. Charles Mark Elliott. Stay safe, stay strong, or stay black.